Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stone Cold Shots podcast, a wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode we review and revisit a wrestling pay-per-view. It could be current or classic WWE, WCW, could be Lucha Underground, who knows. With me today, why don't you guys introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell them if you were in a Vince Russo item on a pole match, what would that item be?
I'm internet darling Josh Felix Pryor, and if I was on a Vince Russo on a pole match, whatever, I would be a sleepless hoodie or a sleepless denim jacket on a pole match.
Nice.
I'm Lauren Maxine. I'm a librarian. And if I were on a Hootie Wotsie special match, yep, on a pole match, I would be a bottle of red wine.
And I am Campbell Falconer, and of course, if I was in a Vince Russo item on a pole match, it would be a 2-in-1 Walmart DVD copy of School of Rock and Nacho Libre.
You know what? That's not fair, man. Campbell springs these on us.
I know. Campbell gets to prep. It's not fair.
It's the name of the game, baby. So, as you might have guessed from that opening, we are discussing WCW Slamboree 98 today. Josh, this was your suggestion, as Lauren and I are not really that familiar with WCW. You want to give us a little bit of a...
Yeah, like specifically was, I remember Jericho doing the announcement for the Cruiserweight Battle Royal. Mm-hmm. And I have a very fond memory of Jericho in this time. So it's like, it was nice to see classic Jericho doing classic Jericho things. So I didn't really know, I didn't remember the other matches on this pay-per-view, and... you know, maybe if post-watching this, I would have suggested another pay-per-view.
Ooh.
Oh.
Slamboree, more like it.
I don't agree.
Yeah, I thought some stuff was okay, but...
Yeah, well, we're going to get into it a little bit more, totally. Obviously, but I think this... I felt like I got a good feel for, like, what WCW,
yeah,
had to offer. Like, you have Jericho and the Cruiserweights obviously standing out. You've got, like, your Sting and your NWO and your...
Goldberg.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, kind of... They're in the middle of breaking out, right? Like, mm-hmm. So this was, like, peak WCW.
Yeah.
You know, they had all the players. They had all the momentum. I found, you know, some of the storylines, they did some very, they were their own worst enemy at times. But, you know, they had a great roster, and a lot of the times, because of that, there were some pretty good matches on here.
So speaking of great roster, we start out with sort of an opening video promo package, My Way-esque, Monster-esque.
Controversy.
Except, yeah.
Outrage. Power.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote down, and then just like question mark. It's like, what is happening? Thanks for the context.
All right.
Yeah, it did its job of introducing like who was in the feud with absolutely not doing its job of telling the story of what the feud was at all.
Any build.
Yeah, and then just like a whole bunch of like Philip Glass-esque Koyaanis Kotsi shots of buildings, wow, falling down.
That was super strange.
I was expecting to see like the march, you know, and like somebody Mussolini banging on the podium. Like.
Yeah. So yeah, we have this opening package that tells you basically nothing about what's happening other than it's like Sting, the Giant.
I only remember Sting.
And the NWO. I think they said Macho Man's name.
Yeah.
And then we get like a opening segment of Eric.
Sad pyro.
Yeah.
Like really sad looking pyro. And it just like it shows you how far we've come, but we're not doing pyro anymore. But like,
yeah,
it's like, oh, look at this amazing opening sequence, and it's like, ooh.
I don't know, man. My reaction was, I miss pyro.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
no,
I do miss pyro
because it's been taken away from me. The
anything will do.
Yeah, it was not lackluster.
And then we get Eric Bischoff reading his letter to Vince McMahon.
Yeah,
that was cool. It hooked me, because I have no idea what's happening. I went into it completely cold.
Sure.
So, like, before the Bischoff bit, there was just a bunch of shit, like, with the commentators saying, like, what was happening and referencing a bunch of old dudes just by name. And I was so nervous, because I was like, I have no idea what, yeah, WCW is. I don't know what's happening. And then Eric Bischoff comes in with his segment and says, I challenge Vince McMahon. And I was like,
oh, now I know,
okay,
these guys.
I understand that. Like, that's the only, yeah, thing.
And the announce team was pretty solid. It was Tony Schiavone, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Mike Tenay.
See, mm-hmm. I didn't even... They were just names to me.
And Bobby the Brain Heenan back in WWF at the time was one of the best announcers of all time. And you could tell, really, he had given up and he was just kind of phoning in all of his calls.
Oh,
tonight.
No! Okay.
So... I was going to touch on this later, but like if we're getting into it now, yeah. So I have Bobby the Brain Heenan is like the commentator that like if like a guy is wearing a Bullet Club shirt, I know that their favorite commentator of all time totally. Is Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah,
A smirk fave.
Yeah. This was like the first time where I've heard him announce like a whole show or a whole pay-per-view. And I was like, this guy isn't funny. Like,
no.
I didn't get it at all.
He's collecting a paycheck. I mean.
Yeah. I do have some quotes that I wrote down a little later because they were... awful. So Schiavone says, "Are you kidding me?" And Bobby says, "No, Kidman is in the ring."
Oh my god. Which just that isn't... confused me so much. I was like, is he joking?
Solid joke.
It's not funny at all.
It's a solid joke.
Schiavone says, "You know that's Spanish for cricket. Do you know who trained him?" And Bobby the Brain Heenan says, "Buddy Holly." Which Whoa. Is a reference to Buddy Holly and the Creed. Like, it's just, he's just doing, like, really awful dad jokes. And these all came after, like, the Jericho introduction. So it was just, like, especially bad by comparison.
Jerry Lawler must have lent him his, like, book of 101 jokes.
Yeah.
He's just reading out of that.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. I want to kind of go back to the Eric Bischoff letter reading, where I think it's kind of something that we talked about in our WrestleMania 30 episode, where, like, I do like pay-per-views that have kind of a storyline throughout, yeah. right? Where you have like this thing that they keep going back to of like, is Vince going to show up?
Sure.
Is Vince going to show up? And that's, it's nice. It kind of ties everything together. I did feel like this, it's kind of a thing where in advertising, if you are like the number one company, you advertise yourself. And if you are the number two company, you do all of your advertisements that are just attacking the number one company.
Yeah. Pepsi and Coke.
Yeah. Pepsi and Coke. Or like this really reminded me of the like, I'm a Mac and I'm a PC.
Yeah.
And it was a thing that is like, it's funny and it ties the pay-per-view together really well, it definitely cemented WCW in my mind as the secondary, like the inferior competitor.
And Vince during this time, you know, keep WCW out of your mouths mm-hmm. kind of thing, right? Across the board, across the brand, they don't exist.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is too early to bring this up, but so then for you, were you watching at this time?
Yeah.
Did you think then that there was a chance Vince McMahon would show up, or was it like a very much like, of course he won't?
Wrestling's like a crazy thing, right? Like, and especially I think maybe it was like 20 years ago, so it would have been like a teenager, like mid-teens. So like, you know, I was still like, I was buying things still. It's like, oh, I don't know, this is crazy. Like, maybe what if he does show up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like young enough and gullible enough, but like, you know, you kind of know he's not going to show up.
They
but.
Set up a Chekhov's McMahon,
exactly.
right?
Well, yeah, for me with the zero context, I was kind of expecting him to show up
sure.
as the very, very last thing that happened on the
show. Or at least
show.
Somebody dressed up as Vince McMahon.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great. Oh yeah. My God.
The teaser of the limo constantly being there was like, I was so hooked on that limo and I was pissed when it didn't turn out to be anything.
Can I say, the last thing that I want to say about this, because we should start talking about like the actual matches that we watched.
This is a match. They introduce it as a match.
They had a
later.
Vinnie Mac cam.
The Vinnie Mac cam. So my favorite thing about these segments is like the Vinnie Mac cam is really funny, but also they keep going back to their head of security who
JJ
is
Dillon.
Yeah. It was just
oh my god,
such an old shitty looking security guard. Like, you're a company that like all you do as a company is employ buff dudes, and this is the dude that you hire to be
that
your
was,
head of
that
security.
Was the longest going joke with WCW, and like
really?
JJ Dillon would also like when Goldberg was doing his entrance, he would knock on Goldberg's door.
Yeah,
and he would always like be walking beside Goldberg. It's like, really, this guy's gonna protect Goldberg?
Oh my god, that's amazing!
Oh, that rules. All right, so getting to our first match of the night, we have Chris Benoit versus Fit Finlay for the WCW TV Championship.
I just have Fit Finlay comes out and has a match by himself for 20 minutes.
What?
I have an edited version of Guess of the Network.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Like, I feel like
we should address
this. That like over the course of like this podcast in general, I think we are revisiting things and we are looking back at a time when there were performers who have since
passed away in an unfortunate situation.
Or done horrible things.
Like,
or have been horrible people.
Yeah, we are going to address matches with Chris Benoit. We are going to address Hulk Hogan. We're going to address Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, these are people that are inextricable from, like, the history of this medium. And I think we're going to do our best to look at it, look at the wrestling objectively, and, like, also look at the people subjectively.
I feel like it's a common sense thing, right? Like, it's like, you know, he had these matches, he was there. We're not glorifying him, like, you know, like, there's actions or anything like that. But it's just like, you know, it happened, so we're gonna touch on it, so.
Exactly.
So, all that being said,
what a match!
Chris Benoit can fucking go!
He's a great wrestler!
I think I've seen maybe one other Chris Benoit match, but this is one of the first ones where I was really, really paying attention, like, taking notes and stuff, and I have a really strong concept of who he is and what shitty things he's done.
Sure.
I have a note with, like reluctant, oh, Chris Benoit is, like, really sick. Like, he's really so good.
He was, like, one of the, I think, like, as far as, like, technical wrestling goes, he's got to be top three of all time.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, Fit Finlay with his little rascal's haircut. And
his high-waisted satin red pants.
And his being totally gassed about 45 seconds into the match.
But they're both great workers. So it's like, you know, they're going to, like, at least put on, like, a solid match, right?
They do, and I think they knew what Finlay's capabilities were at this point, where, like, the pacing of this match does a really, really good job at showcasing their strengths and hiding their weaknesses.
Yeah.
That it's a really, really great technical match, fantastic pacing, and it gets the crowd so involved the way that they paced it, that, like, there's, like, a point where they do, like, a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, which by today's standards is, like, not that big of a move, and the crowd pops, like, crazy for it, you know?
Generally less spots. Like, you didn't see, like, high spots. Mm-hmm. They had the cruiserweight division for that.
Yeah.
And then anything else in, like a normal match, quote-unquote, you know, you'd see just, like, a technical wrestling match, and it's, like, this one was, like, a lot of catch-as-catch-can wrestling.
Totally.
You know, a lot of combinations, a lot of reversals back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and they put on the match they should have put on.
Yeah, no, I thought that Chris Benoit really supported Fit Finlay in it. Like, I could tell that Fit Finlay was a little tired, but I think that Benoit, like, really carried him through in a very believable way, so that I wasn't, like, over analyzing how tired Fit Finlay was, because I think they were both, like, amazing, and it was a really, really great match, and I loved, like, the counter for counter for counter. Yeah.
There's also a spot in this match that made me really happy they don't do headshots with chairs anymore. That was a suicide dive outside by Chris Benoit.
Mm. Oh, man.
Fit Finlay caught him with the chair as he was coming through the ropes.
Yep.
And I was like, holy fucking shit. Thank God this is not a thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, probably didn't help Benoit at all.
Nope.
Definitely not.
I'll leave it at that.
But. Yeah. Hard to watch looking back.
Yeah. Then Booker T comes out looking like Dwight Schrute.
I said, oh my God! I
saw your eyes light up, and I was like, I gotta beat him to it.
Yeah. And causes a distraction that lets Fit Finlay retain his TV championship.
Yep.
Yeah, all in all, a perfectly serviceable match. Good opening, like a little bit of a screwy finish, but...
Kind of a weak finish. I think the finish was some kind of half-ass tilt-a-whirl something or other.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was. I gave it 2.5 bald heads.
Okay.
I don't have a person associated with it, because I realized going through all these matches, there's not a lot of bald-headed people in the world. And this gimmick is not going to last. So I'm just going to stick with the bald head ratings.
We get a little, we are not at the point of corporate WWE toy commercials and skits between every match yet, but we do have a little interview with Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Okay. I was confused by this, like, altered cam of, like, there's a separate commentary team over here. What was that?
So back in the day, when the internet first started, back in my day, it was... so first started off with AOL, and their website just consisted of a few pictures of wrestlers and then a chat, right? So Jericho was on
chat room.
So Jericho was on this chat room. So he was
like, they were doing something techie. I was like,
he was dictating to, I forget who was there, but he was like kind of like cutting a promo, and they would like dictate to the chat. So it was a pretty good time. It was an exciting time. You communicate with wrestlers. Vince McMahon went on one of those things once.
Nice.
It's a very, very exciting time.
Yeah. And I thought Jericho did a good job here. Like, this is kind of like a little precursor of just like showing you like how good he is at talking. Yeah. You know, nice. It's like short and sweet. And then we move on to Bryan Adams versus Lex Luger.
Bryan Adams with Vincent, formerly Virgil.
He just looked like a random man with him. I was like, who's this random man, Vincent?
NWO during this time was kind of bringing up all of the superstars from WWF in the 90s. So anybody who's released from the company, Bryan Adams, Summer 69 Bryan Adams, but this Bryan Adams was crushing WWF.
I just wrote stupid BNL ass name guy.
And then later went on to chronic fame, where their whole gimmick was like a Matrix weed gimmick.
That's sick. That's sick.
And like they had shirts that said like 419. Got a minute?
Whoa.
Very sick stuff. So he's coming out with Vincent, who is just relegated to manager duty for the NWO. And Luger looking real jacked.
Lex Luger looks weird as hell.
Yeah.
I do not like his face. I don't like his pec pops. I don't like anything about him. I hated this match.
I was so into him. I literally wrote, Lex Luger looks sick. I'm behind him. He did the Star Trek double axe handle. And that's all I needed.
The Star Trek double axe.
During the entrance, Tony Schiavone calls it one of the most spectacular entrances of all time.
Yeah.
And it's just him flexing with the saddest pop of pyro behind him. Yeah. I'm like, that?
I spent this entire match watching three dudes in the front row who were wearing Andre the Giant style singlets.
Yep.
One of which was wearing a hockey mask, one of which was wearing a ski mask, and the other had a plain old toque on. And I was just... This match was so boring, I didn't give a shit. I was just watching those guys.
Honestly, it was Luger fumbling around. Luger punched him at the beginning of the match.
Mm-hmm.
And from the punch, Bryan Adams ate shit over the top rope. He eliminated himself. And then, they fumbled around. Luger works over the shoulder for about 3 minutes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then Bryan Adams kicks him for about 10 minutes. And then the match ends with a really sad looking torture rack.
Oh, I thought it was cool. I don't know.
Okay. A really cool, sad torture rack.
I also thought that there was a unnecessarily large pop from the crowd for the worst looking torture rack I've ever seen.
Oh, shit. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. Lord's just going to scratch out some notes here.
I was just like, okay.
That didn't look like it hurt at all. I can't believe he tapped to it.
I find it impressive anytime a man can lift another man above his head.
It's fair.
You've come to the right place.
We got a lot more. We got Goldberg coming up.
And speaking of Goldberg, we have kind of a weird Saturn promo.
Oh my god, that was my
Infinite
favorite.
TVs. The Infinite TVs is wearing
so
a hood.
I was so confused. I was like, this like...
Saturn ruled back in the day. Perry Saturn was one of the coolest dudes. He's part of Raven's Flock.
The Flock, can we say that the Flock is just an awful name for his stable?
It would have been cooler if it was Raven's Murder.
Yeah,
that's what
I was
thinking.
I was like, why would you not call this a murder?
Maybe because they didn't want to... I guess I was going to say maybe they don't want to reference murder, but I guess it's not current WWE.
I mean, they had a murder in the first match of the night. I don't know.
I thought that the whole Saturn thing, I thought he looked like a real bitch in this little...
Whoa!
I don't know.
Lauren's notes, who's this little bitch?
Well, he's pissed and moody about Raven. He's facing Goldberg. He's got a really dumb goatee and hoodie in moody lighting. He sounds like a grown-ass man reciting his high school creative writing.
Right? Yeah, it was kind of reminiscent of when CM Punk had the long straight hair, and it was this promo was Saturn with a whole bunch of TVs behind him, but the promo was just him saying, Mom says it's my turn on the Xbox.
There was only one TV, but they had it looped, so it looked like infinite TVs. And I was like, my note from this, I'm like, me and Saturn dress a lot alike. We have a lot in common. I'd like to have a beer with this man.
Yeah. All right, so then we have the Cruiserweight Battle Royale. And this was kind of the thing that you sold us on when you suggested this, so I had very high hopes.
Yeah, because I remember it very fondly, right? And I haven't gone back and watched it, and I had pulled it up, and I was like, oh, I remember it being much funnier.
What did you think of it looking back on it now?
It was like, I thought
I reveal how I feel about it.
Yeah, I thought Jericho had a couple good lines in there. El Dandy looking like Lou Ferrigno.
That
was the only thing I thought was funny.
Lou Ferrigno lookalike got a belly laugh out of me. I was watching alone.
Yeah.
And like, that was great. I thought that was really funny. I also really liked, I can't remember who he says, but he says they're too poor to afford a mask now. So they just have face
point. Yeah, Damian can't afford a mask, but he's going to be wearing one soon. Juventud Guerrero being the ugliest cruiserweight. I feel like it didn't age well.
And I thought it was stupid. I was so bummed out by it, man.
I remember it being way funnier at the time, but I was also like 14, maybe.
I feel like it was aimed towards a younger audience, and also I have zero context for any of these wrestlers anyway, so I was just like, this is bad. The music is louder than Jericho, and he's fumbling to get his words out fast enough for how fast these cruiserweights are coming out.
Totally, and Jericho is like kind of becoming the Jericho we know, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like an unfinished piece of clay, right? So he's working on it. He was just kind of like throwing shit out there. Before this, like, you know, he went on this tear of collecting trophies from cruiserweights, right? So he beat Juventud Guerrero and took his mask and then wore it on a necklace. There's this guy, Prince Iakea, who had like a Polynesian waist wrap.
Is that the towel
that he was wearing?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
It was one of his trophies. So he's like beating these cruiserweights and collecting trophies.
Oh, that's so much cooler than what I interpreted it.
Totally. Well, but, like leading into this, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, but he was feuding with Dean Malenko. And the build into this match was that he had run Dean Malenko off TV. Oh. And Dean Malenko hadn't been around for about 2 months.
Mm.
So Jericho would come out with like a giant picture of his dad and his dad Boris, who had passed away.
All I got was that he must have thrown some shade at his dad because they were.
He was like calling him like
mentioning it a lot.
Instead of Boris Malenko, he called him like Bore Us Malenko. And like just like all these really bad Jericho dad jokes.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Dean Malenko is billed as the man of 1,001 holds. So Jericho said, well, I'm the man of 1,004 holds. So he printed all of the holds out on this like giant sheet of paper.
Yeah.
And he stood in the ring on a nitro and he read them. He's like, move one, armbar. Move to the Canadian jumping Crescenza. Like he
he's
had like
just always been a natural.
Yeah,
yeah. And so like move four armbar, and so he was reading it, and then Nitro went to commercial, and they came back.
Oh, that's amazing!
And Jericho's in the ring still reading the list, and he's like on move like 950.
Oh my god, that's amazing!
This is the likes, like this is the stuff Jericho is doing at the time. So like I remember Jericho in this phase so fondly. So you know, watching this again, I was a little disenchanted, like I was a little disappointed, but at the same time, like Jericho got me a couple times, and then I remembered, it's like, yeah, Jericho's awesome. He was just kind of building to the Jericho we know now. So
yeah,
so this battle royale was pretty fun. I think it was like most battle royales, you start off a little bit messy, you know, it's like a little full in the ring, but as the crowd starts to thin out, you get some cool spots. I thought that Juventud Guerrero was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, the juice. That's the juice, Juventud.
Yeah. He really stood out. Like, what this match did so well that I think, like, a lot of modern WWE kind of fails to do is it succeeds in, like, three ways, where it showcases a division really, really well.
Yeah.
You have all of the undercard guys there. Like, Psychosis is taking like really, really crazy bumps.
Yeah.
You're showcasing the rest of the division. You're clearly showing who sort of like the next guys in the division to like step up are going to be. And then you're also building to like a crazy frenzy, like a really, really high point for the match that's going to happen next.
And like WCW did this really smart, because this is the time where like they were introducing a lot of the like lucha people from Mexico. So the Ciclope in the match was totally regular, and like, yeah, he's just like another guy. There was like,
this is basically right after like Conan came up from Mexico to WCW and brought this like huge stable of luchadors with him, right?
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
There's a name I recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it was good to see Chavo in there, too.
Dude, little Chavito.
Oh, yeah. Little Chavito.
He's so young.
He looks so young, babyface. And he was great in this match. And I always forget how good that guy's DDT is, like
The tornado DDT.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Thing of art.
Yeah. So we get the Dean Malenko unmasking.
Yeah.
Fuck, I freaked out. I didn't know who it was. I didn't understand their feud until the commentators explained it to me. I was freaking out.
Totally. Like,
as soon as Juventud was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna go. He just got out.
On the chest,
I was
shakes
like,
his hand.
What the fuck is happening? I was freaking out.
And then drama. And so I feel like that hype, like, lets the title match that, like, so Jericho comes in and they have their title match, and it lets it start off, like, so quickly.
So hot.
Like,
that crowd fucking lost their goddamn mind. Like, as soon as Dean took off the mask,
because
they did it perfect. Like, Dean was off TV for 2 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was completely gone.
That's, I think, a really big thing where I was watching it, looking back, is the kind of thing where, like, if this had been WWE now, you know, like, we'll say it's like an intercontinental title, like, open challenge or whatever, and it would be so obvious that the person who had been feuding with whoever was the champion wasn't in the match, and it would be so telegraphed. And so it was a kind of a thing where I was like, were people not expecting this? So knowing that Dean had been off TV for 2 months is like perfect. It's amazing.
Well played. Like, this is when wrestling had patience, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one thing I really miss. Like, a lot of stuff seems hot-shotted. Like, it's just, they think of something, they pay it off, they blow it off within a month, right?
Mm.
You know, wrestling really had, like, legs about, like, you know, spreading a storyline out over a year or, like, 6 months, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this Dean thing was great. And then they had a solid little match there.
Yeah. And
it was good.
Yeah.
I felt like it was the pace and the high spots, like, from the get-go, really worked for this. Like, it didn't feel like it was at the expense of, like, the story that they were trying to tell. It didn't feel like it was at the expense of believability, the way that, like, a Will Ospreay or a Ricochet style match can sometimes be, the way that, like, that style of cruiserweight wrestling has kind of developed to now.
Totally. Like, they're a little bit more athletic than you'd see in, like, a regular match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was, like, a really, like, solid technical match. Like, both guys brought it. There's some interesting fans in the audience during this match. I saw some guy wearing an NWO license plate as a necklace.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's a Jericho sucks dick sign in the crowd,
I
right?
saw that.
Hard camera.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff going on in the audience.
So
good vibes.
Malenko pulls out the win. He finally gets the belt, you know, which seems, it feels very deserved. It feels like something that they've been building to for a while.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great finish. Let's, on the topic of Jericho sucks dick sign, do we want to do a little Stone Cold Shots sign watch? Because I have a few that I noticed over the course of the paper.
Mine are spread out through my notes,
okay,
but if you want to get into it, I mean.
So the majority of mine were about Goldberg, so I can go through them while you guys sort of find yours. I don't really have them in a ranking, so here we go. We have Goldberg beat him like a baby seal.
That's a sign?
Yeah.
What?
There was one person who was just holding a giant Israeli flag that I thought was pretty cool.
I saw my cousin Bill one, which didn't really make sense.
Yeah, I saw that.
Goldberg, spelled G-O-L-D-B-U-R-G, is unstoppable. I thought it was pretty fun. NWO killed Kenny with a bunch of South Park characters I thought was very of the time.
It's very 90s.
I did not see
very
that.
90s.
And then my personal favorite, Goldberg loves Slayer.
I did not see that.
Yeah. So I don't know if either of you guys had some signs that you'd like to shout out
at
this point.
You grabbed most of them. So, I mean, like, it was just like, you know, it was so awesome seeing the 90s in the audience, you know? All the signs, because there's like, you know, maybe a 20th of the signs that they used to have back then.
Yeah.
And they were all so topical. Like, you know, like one guy had like no wonder Vince McMahon sign that, like, he didn't show up.
Yeah.
And McMahon is like, I've never seen a name so poorly spelled. it was spelled M-A-H-A-N. It's like Mahan.
Mahan.
It was so bad. I was like,
yeah,
this is perfect.
All right.
Everything about this is great.
Stone Cold Shots Sign Watch, a segment that will be coming back, undoubtedly.
I like this. Let's do it.
We have a brief return to the Vinnie Mac cam. Nothing really happens.
I didn't give it my
Oh, rating. Sorry. Yes, I did. I jumped can't the believe. Rating I'm sorry.
You're supposed to be steering the ship. What's going on here? I gave the whole thing 3.5 bald heads. I thought it was very solid. Mm-hmm. I thought it was above average. I mm-hmm. thought the energy was right. I thought the match after the, you know, kind of, you know, hit and miss battle royal was great. I well, thought overall it was just like, it was good, right?
I thought
and
the battle royal was surprisingly compelling considering, like, just going off of my current knowledge yep. of battle royals, I'm usually like, I was expecting when I saw like the first shot of all of those dudes in the ring together, I was like, oh, but it ended up being very good.
I feel like the first half was a little bit of a mess. And then the second half really kind of pulled it home, yeah. right?
The thing about this match and the Battle Royale is that you can't really watch one without the other. The Battle Royale is basically what otherwise would have been the first act of that match,
yeah.
right? That, like, if they hadn't had the Battle Royale, it would have just been... It would have been that very standard...
Yeah, that's a great point.
Sort of, like, wrist lock combination, rest hold, reversals...
Totally.
...kind of bit, and they did something a little more interesting and sort of just jumped over what would have been that segment of the match.
Bringing
yeah,
that
totally.
Heat.
They just started yeah. off the that bit, like, hot.
Mm-hmm.
They went right into the heavy-hitting moves.
And then we have Diamond Dallas Page versus Raven in a Bowery Death cage match. This is insane.
So Diamond Dallas,
freaking out.
Diamond Dallas's theme was a Nirvana ripoff.
Okay.
It was like, smells like Teen Spirit, but it was kind of like self-hi-fi. And then it would like go into like the riff. I don't know what this fucking music was, but it really like took a lot of the excitement out of Diamond Dallas's page his entrance on mm-hmm. it. But he got up on top of the cage, threw up the old diamond cutter. The crowd was like buying it up.
That was cool. Him getting on top of the cage. I'm going to be honest. I missed a lot of the entrances for this because I was trying to figure out what the rules of this match were.
Yeah.
So as far as I can tell, it's a steel cage match, but there's a roof on the cage. There's weapons in the cage, and then you win by a 10 count.
So Raven had...
it's last man standing, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raven had a special contract drawn up when he signed to WCW, and this was a storyline that would like happen like when Raven was coming on, and it was a Raven's rules contract. And so like he would like show the piece of paper and like things would be crossed out. So every match he had was like a no disqualification match, you know, like, and then like the conditions of the match would kind of change all the time. So I feel like this match was very on theme with like what Raven was doing at the
That's
time.
That's nuts.
It was cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, it was very confusing kind of going in dry.
I loved it, man. Like, I really like Diamond Dallas Page. That's the first time I've ever seen him. I loved him climbing on top of the cage. I thought it was great. He does like a little Shinsuke body shake up there. And then Raven comes in with Riot Squad.
The original Riot Squad.
The original Riot Squad. I wrote it in my notes the way that our girls do now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Two D's.
Glue
tongues and all.
Yeah. And the commentators really awkwardly sing Bad Boys.
Yep.
That was Bobby the Brain. Again,
it made me so uncomfortable. Yeah. Holy fuck. I was like,
Please don't judge Bobby the Brain Heenan based on this night.
I did.
I know.
That was the other thing about commentary in this match was I was thinking you could make a drinking game out of every time they say Bowery.
Yeah.
Because they say it a lot.
And it's like, still nobody knows what the fuck that means.
So,
well, it's a derelict neighborhood.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we looked it up.
I knew that before we looked it up.
I had to look it up.
I also knew that.
Context clues, people. Come on. Figure
you know
it out.
What?
I did not know that.
I have an English degree.
Okay.
But yeah, no, this was like really the first match of the whole pay-per-view that had like that really got into sort of more extreme wrestling with like intense shots that I was like, I was
hardcore matches
about.
Back in the day were mm-hmm. like for real, especially like these death matches.
Yeah.
They used to put on and like it started off, you went like the turnbuckle hits, like just to start the match off, mm-hmm. like Diamond Dallas Page was like ramming Raven's head into the turnbuckle, and it looked fucking stiff as shit.
Yeah, it did.
And when he, so I think it's a thing where it's like modern connotations is like when Tommy Dreamer shows up for some fucking reason and he's carrying his garbage can and he dumps it out and it's all kendo sticks and like chairs, and you're like, all right, cool. So that was, they dumped the first garbage can, and it was all Kendo 6 and what have you. And I was like, all right, that's pretty fine.
It's pretty standard.
Yeah, and then they dumped the next one, and there was a fucking VCR
in and some fire extinguishers. Yeah. Like, you, multiple fire extinguishers.
If you want to, like, really date this pay-per-view, yeah, just look at the fucking VCR in the ring.
Although, to their credit, you cannot do the damage that they did with that VCR. Like, if you were to use a modern-day fucking DVD player, it's like a fucking envelope.
Yeah. I want to see, like, a hardcore match or, like, a death match now where somebody just, like, smashes a laptop over Dean Ambrose's head.
It's like a frisbee. It's like using the baking sheet.
Yeah.
That's literally what it would be.
But it sounds so good. Mm-hmm. Like, the baking sheets, like, I wish, like, they would bring back, like, the hardcore matches, like, with the baking sheets and, like...
In my mind, I feel like it's a really, like, impressive-looking thing, but in my mind, I'm like, it probably doesn't hurt that bad. But, so, like, I'm it probably hurts. I wouldn't want to get hit by
definitely
one.
Definitely doesn't hurt.
It makes me happy as a watcher, being like, it looks awful because you're getting hit by metal, and the metal bends.
It looks so good. Like, it's such a good prop.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that it does not hurt because I saw the Pogues in concert one time, and old ass man Shane McGowan was just dummying himself with a baking sheet as auxiliary percussion, and I feel like if you got like a 70-year-old dude with like 3 teeth on stage hitting himself, not getting a wrestling paycheck, it can't be that bad.
That guy's so numb now.
Maybe Shane McGowan is a bad example.
Yeah, not the best.
But yeah, there was this like insane unprotected headshot with a VCR, and it was so upsetting. And that was after the lynching that happened.
The literal hanging.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm going to say this a lot. The 90s were a different time.
Yeah.
Jesus. You know, and, you know, I hear people say that about, you know, like older generations. But it was just really figuring itself out. And, you know, hanging somebody out of a steel cage... You know, the WWE did it with the Big Boss Man. I'm not saying it was good. It's just something that was accepted back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, Diamond Dallas Page wins the match, and then we have our second unmasking back-to-back.
Well, it was, like, way cooler than you're presenting it. Like, I was really into it. So, like, Riot Squad member starts attacking the flock and
spends
then
20 minutes handcuffing everybody to the cage.
I wrote a note. I was like, did this dude come out with like 8 handcuffs?
Like, honestly, like, you're underselling it because it was more like it had to be at least 15 handcuffs.
Really?
He was handcuffing people, then he handcuffed Raven twice.
Yeah,
like by my count, I was just like, how big are those? Like,
God bless
cargo pants, because it was very impressive.
It was cool. Like, I was into it to a point, but like the handcuffing was longer than the actual match that preceded it.
Definitely,
it was a long walk. It was just that it was the second. Like, if this match wasn't already kind of overbooked enough with, like, so many bits to the gimmick that you had to have this run-in and this handcuffing and this second unmasking, it felt like a thing where it was like, y'all couldn't save this for, like, Nitro the next night,
Just to backtrack for a second, though.
I don't know, I liked it.
During the match, so the flock runs out, they swarm the ring, they're all attacking Diamond Dallas Page. Kidman is hanging from the top of the cage.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, Diamond Dallas Page kind of swings him while he's hanging.
Yeah.
And hits a diamond cutter on him. I'm like, that was awesome.
That was amazing. Yeah. I'm very sorry for skipping over that.
That's
that
okay.
That was awesome.
But, like, I feel like the diamond cutter was such a great move. And Diamond Dallas Page, like, just like Randy Orton, like, was so good at, like, coming up with new ways to, like, nail it on people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, that was like, you're doing shit that, like, 10, 15, 20 years outside of you having any business doing this.
No, it was sick.
And again, Diamond Dallas Page picks up the win. It's a last man standing rules.
Yep.
Kind of the old wobbly. And then the Riot Squad.
And then Mortis handcuffs Raven up, like, both hands. So, yeah, you're right. 2 handcuffs in use.
Yeah.
And then does a great unprotected chair shot to the fucking head. That was a little disturbing for me. That was
the ECW mentality, right? Like, so it's like Raven came from ECW, and those guys just, like, did a bunch of drugs, drank a bunch, and then just, like, killed each other in the ring.
It's rough.
Like, honestly, like, in that chair shot, again, thank God we've moved past that in wrestling.
It doesn't make me happy. Yeah.
And can we get a bald head rating?
Yeah, I gave this 3 3/4 bald heads. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a really solid match.
Yeah.
It's hard hitting. Mm-hmm. Slowed down a little bit during the riot stuff at the end, but yeah. Still, Soup to Nuts was an awesome match.
Yeah.
Really quick between the matches, we get another view of the Vinnie Mac cam. Nothing much happening there. And then we get Saturn in the AOL booth.
Yeah.
And my takeaway from this was Jericho's great. Like, yeah. Like Saturn's little sojourn to the AOL was like so bland and nothing, and just like made me like, oh, remember when Jericho did this 20 minutes ago and it was awesome?
Like, Saturn wasn't the smartest guy. Like, yeah. Saturn was like great in the ring, but again, promos, yeah. Whatever.
Yep. All right, so now we have Ultimo Dragon versus Eddie Guerrero, and they are fighting for Chavo Guerrero Jr.'s freedom, which is a fun little stipulation there.
Absolutely. Ultimo Dragon, he used to come out to the ring in WCW wearing every belt that he'd collected. So I think he'd won something like 7 or 9 belts.
Mm-hmm.
He used to come out like just draped
yeah.
in all of these belts. So that's I guess sick. At this point, he'd lost them all. And he also invented the acai moonsault.
Yeah.
So it's named after him, like the springboard moonsault off the second rope.
Io Shirai's current finishing move.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, Eddie Guerrero coming to the ring. How good of a heel is this guy?
So
he is having so much fun, man. Yeah. Like,
and he looks great.
Yeah.
Looking
yeah.
great. Looking real slick, you know?
Looking real jacked, baby.
Looking real jacked, baby. Yeah, it takes his fan sign that says, free at last, which I thought, you know, maybe a bit much, but it had a picture of Chavo on it, and like Eddie takes it, does the old heel, rips the sign in front of him. I love stuff like that. That's like yeah. old school, easy stuff, but yeah. Guerrero was so good at it.
Yeah, and this is a really fun match. This is like totally. Kind of throwback to like the, I think like kind of perfect mix in terms of what we've seen so far is like the technical aspects of the Benoit Finley match with all of the kind of like pops and high spots of the Jericho Malenko match. Like these guys just put on an absolute clinic in this sort of like lucha proto indie style mm-hmm. wrestling, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had a great exchange at one point where they're doing this, like, they're like flipping each other.
The monkey flip spot? The
monkey flip spot.
Oh my God.
That exchange. And it was so smooth. And yeah. you're like, these guys are both fucking at the top of their game. So good, so smooth, and they're just like they knew all the moves.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like I think that's the thing that I was watching it where I was thinking like this isn't maybe as over the top flashy as like current mm-hmm. indie style wrestling is or like current Lucha Libre is. Like you're not seeing any sort of like Rey Fénix like
no.
I'm gonna jump from the second to the third to yeah. the first to the third and do a moonsault kind of stuff. But the moves that they do pull off are like so beautiful in their simplicity and like just how smooth both of them are, you know?
Just like technically executed perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Ultimo Dragon is, this is a dude that I've heard so much about and I've never actually watched yeah. any of his matches before and he is a treat to watch.
And like
yeah.
who better against Eddie Guerrero mm-hmm. to get in there to like see your first match with this guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, right?
Yeah. And I thought it was a really great story behind the match too. Like
mm-hmm.
Chavo was kind of a tweener in this match. Like he was defending Ultimo Dragon
mm-hmm.
when Eddie was sort of like choking him with like the TV cord, and then Eddie slaps Chavo in the face and yeah. he was just like, whoa, yeah. how could you hit your baby?
Yeah.
And yeah, and there was a lot of family relations happening,
and he was really slapping it. He was giving it to him. Mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa, that's spicy.
Skip a little bit, I loved the ending piece where he was like, where Chavo was so pissed and yeah. he was attacking Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah.
And then Eddie Guerrero was like, yo, man, like, it's fine. Like, and Chavo got really aggressive with Eddie and he was like, yo, hit me right here.
Yeah.
Hit
yeah.
me right yeah. here. And then Chavo didn't do it and he's like, give us a kiss.
Yeah, the little,
give
the
us
little
a keys.
Smile and the kiss was the perfect little cherry on top. You
such
know?
A Sopranos moment.
Yeah.
Totally. And Eddie turning to the camera, the heart camera, and just like giving the old Eddie
he
smile.
He looked yeah. right the fuck at the camera.
Oh, Eddie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good. Like, and during the whole match, Eddie is for my money, Eddie is probably the best heel of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as far as like old school shitty, like, and people say like Ric Flair and stuff like that. For me, it's Eddie Guerrero because he knew what worked and he did it so well and he had a charisma about him.
You love to hate him.
Yeah. he's like the perfect like embodiment of what a heel should be, in my opinion. So all throughout the match, you know, just like the little cheats, you know, like trying to like distract the referee and like the begging and like everything he was doing was just.
I really liked Chavo as sort of like the third man in the match. It was like very subversive that like he was there accompanying the heel to the ring, but he wasn't there to help the heel in the match, where normally you would have like Chavo as the guy accompanying the heel being the guy to distract the ref so that Eddie can get his feet up on the ropes and win. Chavo's the guy who knocks Eddie's feet off of the ropes, right? Sorry. It was total breath of fresh air. Trying like fantastic to, booking, fantastic storytelling.
Yeah.
Show the referee if he's cheating. Like, just like, again, like it gives a thread. It gives a story during the match. It was like palpable, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It was great.
In spite of all that, Eddie Guerrero still wins.
Yeah,
perfect. Chavo is not free.
Yeah. Still enslaved to Eddie DeGuerrero.
And has then, to give all the kisses.
And
then
the kisses to his uncle.
In Ultimo Dragon not only loses the match, but then he gets the shit stomped out of him by Chavo, the guy that he was trying to help.
Bad day. Bad day for Ultimo.
Yeah.
I didn't see any problems with this match. I thought it told a good story. I gave it 3 3/4 bald heads. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just solid front to back.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
It's out of 5, right, bud?
It is out of 5.
You're so...
He's a hard man to please.
Listen, I'm like a Meltzer. I'm the Meltzer of this podcast.
So moving on, we finally get Saturn versus Goldberg for the United States Heavyweight Championship, which was supposed to be a gauntlet match with the entirety of the flock, but Saturn thought, no, I can do this on my own.
Yep.
He couldn't.
Dumbass.
No.
But we'll get to that in a bit.
Yep. Bless him for trying, though.
Goldberg gets my Samoa Joe So Cool Award of the Pape. Goddamn.
Goldberg in his prime. Look, Jack, had the intensity. He did his part perfectly in this match. Like, Goldberg coming out, fans were eating it up. Like, he had the intensity, and, like, he got into the ring. Mm. As soon as he was walking around, like, he owned that ring. Like, it was crazy to watch.
I've never seen old Goldberg.
Yeah,
like, young Goldberg. I've only ever seen... Current, like when Goldberg came and like defeated Brock Lesnar.
Old
Goldberg.
Man, so it's, I think it's the thing
where
it's like.
So good.
Goldberg defeating Brock Lesnar in like 7 seconds or whatever at Survivor Series a couple years ago was something that like at the time I was like, that's dumb. And the more time that passes and especially the more that like watching this, I'm like, no, that was awesome. And like this was incredible.
And this
gave me the context I needed for that Brock Lesnar match. I was like, oh, I get it. Goldberg is fucking sick. Like,
yeah,
he's just a beast.
Like, and he was on his winning streak now. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
was it fucking 85-0?
So the winning streak got to something like 160. Like, I don't have the exact number, but it was crazy. And like, the more he won, the more the fans were invested. And this is what I was talking about, like, back in the day. I think the storyline lasted almost 3 years.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And, like, they were doing it right. I think this was the longest match he had had up until this point.
Mm-hmm. Most of them were, like, really, really fast, very
spear, jackhammer, done.
Yeah.
And, again, it would be against anybody, you know? So it was great to see. And I think he was in the right... in there with the right person with Saturn.
Like, it does a really good job of putting Saturn over as, like, the guy who took Goldberg to his longest match.
Totally.
Right?
And, like, and Saturn's such a good worker. Like, and you can tell in this match, you know, Saturn was hitting all the spots. Mm-hmm. He's so crisp and, like, smooth in the ring. And I actually forgot how good Saturn was as a technician. And, you know, this only helped Goldberg. Goldberg played his part perfectly, and Saturn played his part perfectly, and, like, the whole match went off exactly how it should have.
So I have a question. Maybe this is a little bit more for Josh as someone who was watching at the time, but I want your opinion on this as well. So Goldberg is a guy who, in this time period, was beating everybody. He was having relatively short matches. He was using 2-3 moves tops, kind of. What made this work? What made people invested in this versus how Brock Lesnar has been booked in WWE over the past few years?
So they did Goldberg right, and I don't think it'll ever be replicated. They knew exactly from the start what they were going to do with the guy. They came in, it was against a nobody jobber. He came and squashed the guy. And then they started, like, he would do it against Buff Bagwell or somebody, like, you know, kind of like mid-card, lower mid-card kind of guy. But, you know, and then he, like, started, like, organically building. And the fans saw that, right? And then, like, the fans started asking, what if, like, this guy was against, like, you know, somebody like a Raven or somebody, like, you know. So, like, then eventually, like, he would go up against these people. Spear, jackhammer, same. And Goldberg was the perfect person. Like, it was almost like a perfect storm situation where it's like, you have the right guy, you have the right intensity. He's not a great worker, but they're booking him right. It was the best thing WCW ever did. Aside from the NWO, is Bill Goldberg. And, like, I think with Brock, they're trying to do the Hogan spectacle.
Yeah, riffing off of that, for me, the difference is the intensity. Like, as you mentioned, I feel like Brock Lesnar is a more laid-back champ, and he feels like he's like a prize fighter who doesn't come out all the time. He only comes out for the big, big pay-per-views, or he only comes out for the million-dollar deals or whatever. And he doesn't even fucking speak for himself. Brock just stands there and kind of looks like smarmy and like, fuck you. Like, he doesn't have the fire. Whereas in this match with Goldberg, he even on his streak, like, he knows he's hot shit. And he comes out with full intensity. He just fucking destroys everything. Like, he knows walking in there, he's like, I'm gonna fucking demolish this guy. And he does. And he fucking lifts him above his head. Straight arms.
Straight power.
It lifts him above his head for like a long time. Then, couple of times.
And then like squats him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he looked so nonchalant about it. He was just an absolute beast. He was in it all the way. Whereas I don't feel like Brock Lesnar is.
So we finish it off with this amazing sort of Saturn trying to jump off the chair, getting speared out of midair, which was fantastic. And then Goldberg just stomp destroys the chair.
Yeah. He didn't even mean to, I don't think. He just destroyed that chair.
Walking normally.
Elephant and an ant.
Gets him up for the jackhammer, 1, 2, 3. It was fantastic. Whoa, how many bald heads are we talking?
Three bald heads. You know what? Like, the match itself wasn't anything to write home about, but like, it was a perfect Goldberg match.
Oh, man, I was so into it.
No. It was great.
So next up we have Eric Bischoff versus Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
You know what? This match, for me, for my dollar, I gave this 5 bald heads. This
really stole the show, eh?
This was the match of the year for 1998.
Eric Bischoff looks like such a peak 90s grease bag. Like,
he looks so shitty.
He looks like a bully on a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
I thought he looked so shitty.
And they were trying to get the crowd to buy it the whole time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they were really going for it. Like, they're zooming in all the fan signs, and like, you know, it's like, everybody count along. Well, we count out Vince McMahon. So like, Eric Bischoff comes out.
Yeah, the black belt in karate.
Karate. The whole thing was like, honestly, it was so forced.
This was a thing where it was like, I couldn't tell if people liked this at the time, because there were so many signs about Eric Bischoff in the crowd that I was like, maybe people like this. But I feel like this ages so poorly because of the way that like Shane McMahon books himself now.
Sure.
You know, or the way that like Triple H always has to have a spot in WrestleMania. Like, this pay-per-view is long. Yeah. You know, and this episode is long because we've been talking about it for so much, you know. And it's like, did this really need to happen?
It totally didn't. It's like, and this was like, again, this was peak Eric Bischoff, where he was like just posturing, right? So he was like,
never come out.
Yeah. It's like, and then he's like giving cues to the announce team, like, make sure you like harp on the fact that, like, you know, Jim Ross is going to be carrying Vince McMahon's bags, and like all these like pot shots that they're taking. And it's like, it was so phoned in. And again, it just makes WWE look like the number one, to like build on your point, and like WCW look like they're punching up.
Yeah.
Which could work if you're like a Paul Heyman running an ECW.
Exactly.
But it's not going to work in this situation. Yeah. So.
Only thing I wanted to talk about this match, or match was that they build Vince McMahon as being 265 pounds.
Fuck yeah.
Anybody
twisted
have any
steel
thoughts?
And sex appeal right there. You know what? I'm actually gonna be like, yeah, Vince was probably legit 265 back then.
No way.
I'm telling
you. Just in his upper chest and arms?
Vince McMahon is like 6'4"?
No.
He's a tall dude.
No, he's not.
And if you've seen him, like, he was like on a cover of like Men's Health.
Yeah.
And he looked fucking jacked.
So 265 with or without the chain that he's wearing on that cover.
That puts him about 303, brother.
So moving on to a real match. And what a match.
Was it?
Brett was coming out and I was like, poor Brett.
Can I introduce the match? Can I introduce the plethora of fucking people that are in stipulations that are in this mess of a match? So we have Brett the Hitman Hart versus Brett the Hitman Hart versus Macho Man Randy Savage with Rowdy Roddy Piper as a guest referee.
and Michael Buffer was doing the announcing for this match. And Bret Hart was coming out and he's like, the master of the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Brett. That's it. He didn't say Hart.
He just said Brett.
I didn't notice that. You want to know why I didn't notice that? Is because I was too perplexed with the sunglasses Bret Hart was wearing. Did WWE or WWF at the time have like a patent on the Bret Hart sunglasses that he had to wear those weird like Ozzy Osbourne, John Lennon?
It was so bad. And like I felt Bret, like you can tell in Bret's like demeanor and the way he was walking, you know, he had made a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And WCW had booked him so poorly during his entire run there. And he's like, why am I in this match?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what am I doing here? And it really showed on how he was carrying himself. And the sunglasses.
Yeah, no, I was immediately disengaged.
Yeah.
I feel like this match is kind of antiquated in the way that they, like, it feels like a very throwback to, like, kind of an 80s style match where the rest of the card has been so technical and all of this sort of, like, new 90s, like, cruiserweight, lucha libre kind of stuff. So I don't really want to talk about the match that much, but I do have a question for you guys again. And this ties in a little bit, like, so this was, like, a co-main event to the show, right? All night we've been talking about Bret Hart. We've been talking about Randy Savage, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Hollywood Hogan. And if you look at the top of the card of WCW at this point, it's all guys that they've just bought and they've just brought over from WWF. And so I was thinking about that and how that seemed to be a business model that doesn't really hold up by virtue of WCW not existing anymore. And I think it's a thing where, like, I was watching this and I was thinking, like, this is kind of like NXT right now. Where if you look at NXT right now, like, the entire top of that card, the majority of the NXT men's division is all guys that they've pulled from Ring of Honor, guys that they've pulled from New Japan, guys that they've pulled from Impact. Like, there's so much Impact in NXT right now. And so it's a thing where it's like, do you see that as presenting a problem for the longevity of NXT's booking going forward?
No. And, like, I'll say this. So WCW's model is different in the fact that, like, they would take people that have drawing power. So you get your Hulk Hogan, Macho Man's, Bret Hart's, Roddy Piper's, who aren't necessarily good workers, but they're always going to be a draw. I think NXT's doing more of a thing where it's like, these are proven talent.
You know, right.
These are people that have worked in multiple promotions. You know, they're 15 years into the game. Are they going to main event WrestleMania? Probably not. But they're going to like impart a lot of wisdom into the younger NXT stars. They're going to have solid matches and, you know, there's going to be a little bit of buzz around them with WCW is like very top heavy with. So I think it's structured a little bit differently.
Sure.
I don't know how I feel because like, I do feel like I think NXT is so compelling because of all the indie stars that they have and that energy that they have and they develop the characters really well. I will say that it makes me very bummed out and disengaged when they elevate one of their stars who I've put a lot of time and effort into coming to love on NXT, and they elevate them a la Shinsuke Nakamura, and then they fucking fade into nothing. Mm-hmm. So to watch all of, like, as a, like, I want to say long-term NXT viewer, but, like, probably not that long, I guess, only a couple of years, right? But
long,
like,
enough.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I've seen a couple of stars come up and then be wasted away, and it makes me very upset. So I lose a little bit of investment every time a new guy comes on who I've known of previously, and I'm like, ooh, this new guy's coming to NXT. Mm-hmm. I guess it means a little less every time because I'm so worried about what's going to happen to them when they get elevated to main roster. So I guess I can sort of see your point, but I feel like NXT does such a good job of creating characters on that brand specifically. Like, they take a long time to develop those characters and create storylines.
So I think there's two things that you guys haven't really touched on that, like, from my perspective, that one, like, I think NXT has a tendency to kind of shoot itself in the foot a little bit with their influx of new talent. For instance, right now, like, I'm way more interested in someone like a Kona Reeves, who I have not seen on TV in months, but they did a good job of, like, building his character. And I want to see him way more than I want to see, like, Dijakovic, you know, or like it's that thing where it's like you have a couple of like sort of homegrown talents that you have built up from the Performance Center of the, who are your kind of your undercard, your workers, your character guys that you are totally sacrificing for this new name that you've brought in from Ring of Honor or whatever. And that's a thing that I think is like kind of disappointing. And then I don't know how well that method is going to hold up with AEW coming up, as I don't think AEW is going to be like a competitor to WWE, but I think AEW as sort of like an amalgamation of the indies as a whole could serve as a very viable competitor to NXT. And if you're going to keep banking on this idea of like, we're going to buy this person, we're going to buy this person, what happens when those people don't sign on to NXT because they have the option of going to AEW instead, and you haven't developed your Performance Center undercard?
I think we're talking about apples and oranges, though. I think the equivalent of what you're talking about is NXT having John Cena.
Okay.
You know, I think it's the equivalent of like NXT having Roman Reigns, John Cena on a weekly basis, and then NXT being a competitor for WWE. Like, if AEW, like we're just talking about AEW, if they sign John Cena, like, that's the same. So your draw is John Cena. Like, right. John Cena's going to be here. But you know the rest of the card is stacked. So, but, like, with WCW, like, to bring it back home, you know, you're going to have your Hogans and your Hearts and everything booked at the top, because that's going to bring, that's going to get your pay-per-view buys. And then hopefully you sell the brand on the actual action building up to it.
Sure. Okay. Good talk.
Good talk.
So
we're at an hour and a half.
Yeah. All right, so the match finishes here in, like, the most clusterfuck overbook finish of all time, maybe, where
Elizabeth comes out for some reason.
Yeah,
in
so
full leather.
Here's, I tried to figure out the chronology of this. Ms. Elizabeth runs out and distracts Piper long enough for Bret Hart to hit him with a foreign object.
Yeah.
Savage steals the foreign object, but then gets kicked in the dick.
Yeah.
Hogan runs out and attacks Savage.
Yeah.
And then Bret Hart puts Savage in the sharpshooter, and Piper comes to and disqualifies Savage as he's tapping out.
Because he sees the foreign object in Savage's hand.
And Savage had pushed Piper
previously,
right before Piper turned around.
So
Piper is like basically not unconscious, but he like is down for the count after being pushed by Savage, and then the next thing he sees when he gets up is Savage with a foreign object, so he's like, fuck you.
But Savage is already tapping out while he's getting disqualified.
He was tapping out, and fucking Piper goes up and grabs his tapping hand to take the thing out of it and like, yell at him about it. And it was like, he's fucking tapping. Why are you touching him?
Now, listeners, I want to like really convey this. It's exactly as convoluted as it sounds.
I had to rewind it and watch it again.
Yeah, it was a lot going on.
This is the thing where it's like, I feel like the lasting legacy of WCW to an extent is this kind of like extravagant overbooking, which we've touched on a little bit with like the Bowery Death Cage match.
Sure.
But this just exemplifies it so much that you have like two run-ins, a foreign object, a guest referee. Like there's so much crammed into this match and they still can't make it interesting or good at all.
Well, they're trying to get too cute, right? Like, so it's, they were so confident, like, and they were beating WWE in the ratings at this time. So, like, they were just like, yeah, let's try this. And, like, around the same time, like, they did the Nash and Hogan infamous finger poke of doom. That's the kind of shit that was going on. And, like, a convoluted ending like this just, like, really plays to the fact that, like, WCW was just, like, throwing shit against the wall at this point.
Right.
Know?
Right.
Yeah.
So, how many bald heads did this receive?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah, like, honestly, it was whatever. Like, it was a solid technical match, I guess.
The crowd seemed to really like it. Like, that's the one thing that I think this match had going for it, is that, like, the crowd was really hot for it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they were.
Piper. The crowd loved Piper.
Mm.
And, like, Bret and Savage, they're all big stars. Can't go wrong. The match kind of sucked, though.
Yeah.
Sucked.
So before getting into our main event, we've been kind of dancing around this all evening or all card. Can you, for the sake of myself, for the sake of Lauren, for the sake of the listener at home who might not be familiar with WCW at this time, can you give us the most abbreviated kind of Sparks Notes history of the various members and factions of the NWO leading up to this
match?
Holy
shit. This is like a loaded question. So Cole's notes is like, NWO started with Hogan, Nash, Hall. They introduced DiBiase, Virgil, Eric Bischoff, who's the owner of WCW, eventually joined on.
Mm-hmm. Wait, he's in NWO?
Yeah, he was wearing an NWO shirt under his cuffed jean jacket.
DiBiase was like the financial backing. Bischoff was the power. A lot of shit happened. A lot of members joined. NWO became like half of the WCW roster, so every Nitro you'd hear the NWO theme like probably 30 times.
It is ridiculous that even after the split, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, yeah. But just like one of the things that I noticed about this match that was like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Was just the fact that you had like you had face NWO and heel NWO, yeah. Like Wolfpack and Hollywood, right? And they all had the same theme song. Like, what, you couldn't tweak it a little bit?
Well, so the Wolfpack actually had their own theme song, I think probably right after this, but it was like, it was Conan. So before that, NWO had so many members that they had the NWO A team and then the NWO B team. And the B team was like the jobbers. So like Virgil, Horace Hogan.
Vincent,
sorry. And then the Wolfpack split off, and that was like Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Lex Luger. Sting eventually joined, and he had like red and black face paint, so yeah. He looked like a bug. like a ladybug.
Honestly, I've seen the Sting Wolfpack shirts where it's just like his face with the red face paint. I think it looks pretty cool. I'm here for it.
Yeah, you're here for it.
And Jeff Hardy.
Yes, it looks very Jeff Hardy, yeah. And I think you just ruined it for me.
Oops.
In like action, though, to actually see it, it looked terrible. So this was like right at the beginning, as soon as they had split off, because there was a contingency that was against Hulk Hogan, yada, 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 and here we are.
So it's, how did, again, I know, like, we're running long on this, but I do the one piece that I kind of haven't really put together. Like, I feel like a lot of that I kind of picked up from context clues, from commentary. The one thing that I haven't really put together is, so you have NWO Hollywood is kind of the heel faction that's led by Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And then you have NWO Wolfpack, but they're also referred to as like WCW NWO because Eric Bischoff is aligned with them. Or no, like, how does that factor in?
Eric Bischoff is Hogan WCW, and all the pay-per-views passed a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
They had this power struggle kind of pay-per-view where if NWO won, they would take over a certain thing. So all the branding from there on out was WCW NWO presents a pay-per-view. But Eric Bischoff was very much still Team Hogan, NWO Black and White.
Right. And then, like, he was totally wearing a black and white shirt. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah.
So, and then these other guys were like just kind of and they were the faces of the NWO.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Nope. But anyway, moving on to the tag match. So we have the Outsiders, a.k.a. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, with Dusty Rhodes.
American Dream, baby.
Wearing red and black, coming out to defend the WCW tag belts against Sting and the Giant, a.k.a. Paul White, a.k.a. the Big Show.
It's a giant.
Yeah. So Scott Hall comes out and like, man, this dude is such a killer promo. From the second he says, hey, yo.
Everybody loses their mind.
I was so into it, man.
And like, here's one for the good guys. Like,
that guy should have been world champion. That guy is the best wrestler, in my opinion. Him and Perfect, best wrestlers that never had the belt.
So I guess basically the story of this match is kind of the ambiguity of whether or not Sting will commit to being on a team with Big Show, who has like just defected to NWO Hollywood.
So it's like the build was both the NWO factions were trying to recruit Sting.
Mm-hmm.
So the payoff to this match should have been, what will Sting say when he's presented with a shirt?
Mm.
But we'll get to that.
Right. In the meantime, I thought this was a pretty solid tag match.
Yeah.
I thought this was fun. I am a huge fan of tag team wrestling. I think especially, like, the way that NXT does tag team wrestling. Like, I think it's so ripe for storytelling in such an easy way that, like... And I think they do a really, really good job here with a little bit of... What's the word? They kind of subvert a little bit of the tropes here, where, like, you have the outsiders who are, like, the face tag team, but they're still kind of wrestling heel a little bit. Like, you still have Scott Hall doing his bad guy shtick.
Yeah. And, like, the story should be, like, they're the established tag team, right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, they know all the moves together. Like, at one point, Scott Hall had, like, an abdominal stretch on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was reaching back and grabbing Kevin Nash's hand for the additional leverage.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's like...
Yeah.
They're so a well-oiled, like, machine.
Exactly. So little things like that, little moves like that.
I really popped when we had Big Show squaring up against, or sorry, the Giant squaring up against Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for, like, these, like, Vince McMahon-esque, just, like, big guys. Like, and I think that I don't necessarily want, like, a whole show devoted to it, but in the same way that we had the Cruiserweight Classic, I want, like, a Hoss. Big guy. Like, I want like, a Hoss tournament, you know? Like, give me Keith Lee and, like, the dudes from Heavy Machinery and the Big Show, and bring back Mark Henry for a stint, and, like, give me a, like, 16-man tournament of, like, instead of 205 Live, we're gonna have 305 Live.
You know? That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, get Vince McMahon with the chains on.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Book it.
Book it. That would be actually legit amazing.
Yeah.
Or if they do, like, a battle royal.
Killian Dane as well. Like, yeah. I'm just trying to think of, like, all the big dudes that they have on the roster right now. And it's like, throw everybody in there. I would be so into it.
Yep. Braun Strowman?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've been talking about this match a lot. Do you guys have any takes? Because I have one more take, but it's a big take.
Honestly, you know, the match was, it was fine. Like, it was just kind of, like, whatever. There was a spot in the match, though, where the Giant, Big Show, went up to the top rope. And it was fabled that in the power plant, he was able to do a moonsault.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, shit. Does he do a moonsault here?
I thought the same thing.
But no, it was just him going up to the top rope. And again, very impressive. But he does, like, a giant splash, no pun intended.
A giant just... jump and fall.
A giant big old fall.
Yeah.
The old timber splash.
It was Nash who was in the ring at that point, so. Right?
Yeah.
I honestly think he's a coward for not taking that bump.
His thing is he's big sexy. Like,
I would have taken it.
Not in the face.
No, just in the, like, tasseled red pants.
I love that he just had, like, his diesel WWF stuff, like, just spray painted red. It's my favorite.
So my one big thing about this match, and I'm going to kind of, like, give me the book here, right, is that basically the story of this match is who will Sting choose to work with? Will Sting be able to work with the Giant? And out of all four dudes in this match, the Giant is really the only guy who's, like, a full heel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he has joined NWO Hollywood. He is the only, like, out-and-out bad guy.
Yeah.
So I thought it was weird that they built the match to give the Giant the hot tag. They built the match where, like, it makes sense. Sting's the smaller guy. You have the experienced tag team kind of beat down Sting. And then will he get to the Giant to have the Giant come in? But it felt weird because the crowd didn't really know what to do. Like, no one was cheering for the Giant because he was the heel, and it's weird to build the hot tag for the heel. So, what I think they should have done...
I like this.
Yeah, this is...
It's a new segment.
Yeah.
Campbell Books.
Campbell Books. So, I think you swap Sting and the Giant. You have the outsiders as the established tag team be able to dominate the Giant just through... their cohesion, their like skill. It makes the outsiders look a lot stronger for being able to dominate such a, like, huge physical character in the ring. You build the ambiguity of, like, you build to the hot tag of Sting coming in as a guy who's actually a white hot baby face that the crowd can get behind, but also build to whether or not, like, will Sting tag the Giant or will Sting walk away. And then, like, when he finally does tag in, the crowd goes nuts. You know, like, that's, I think it's a thing where it's like, if you swap those two dudes and have the same match, it would be way better just for all of the intrigue, all of the tension, and it makes the outsiders look like a bigger deal.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Give him the book. That's what I say. Yeah. Give Campbell the book.
I've sent it many a time.
Get him back to 1998. No, so I think that's great.
Yeah, so the match ends with, like, Scott Hall knocks out Kevin Nash, his own teammate, and it's a big swerve.
Big swerve, big
heel
turn.
You're like, did he make a mistake?
Russo, baby. No.
I was wondering if he made a mistake.
You just hit the wrong guy.
Yeah. And then, you know, Giant pins him, and then Scott Hall hugs the Giant.
Boo.
And then fucking Dusty Rhodes comes in and he's also turns heel.
Yeah.
That was the breaking point for me. I was like, no.
Which is crazy because, like, I don't know. Scott Hall, to me, like, was the most over guy in that match.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you just totally flipped on the crowd. But, like, the 90s were a time of just, like, being contrary and, like, swerving everybody all the time. And whatever. Like, it was what it was. It was, like, a very WCW kind of finish to a match. So I was like, that is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, the only thing I was perplexed about, like, I was perplexed, but looking back on it, it totally makes sense, was that Sting never makes a choice.
Exactly.
It's a cliffhanger. It's, you have no idea what he's going to do, which obviously is, like, the point of a cliffhanger, and so you tune in. But I was like,
and so that was
so frustrating.
That was kind of the thing, is that, like, as much as, like, maybe that is kind of disappointing, is, like, it, to its credit, as soon as this pay-per-view finished, I almost went onto the went into the network and, like, watched the episode of Nitro next, and because I was like, oh my god, I need to see what happens, and it worked me perfectly.
That, so the problem with that is it works, but WCW did that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They would promise a payoff. The payoff to the entire match was after they won the WCW tag team titles. Sting would make a choice.
Right.
Right? Like, that was going to be the payoff.
That was the setup for the pay-per-view.
Right?
And they skip it.
The premise. And it's like, tune into Nitro, folks! It's like, fuck you guys. But they did that all the time. So eventually people were like, you know what? Like, I'm just not going to buy the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just tune into Nitro the next night.
Right. They played themselves.
Congratulations. They played themselves.
Oh.
How many bald heads do they play themselves to the tune of?
2.5. Solid tag team match. Nothing to write home about. Mm-hmm. Classic WCW ending on a match.
No.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got, like, this kind of segues in. We finish off, if this is your first time tuning in, we finish off with our high spots and our botched spots, which are, could be a match, could be a promo, could be just a small thing that, like, we wanted to highlight a little bit more than we have talked about previously, that something that we liked and something that we didn't like. And I usually go last, but I think this kind of segues into my botched spot. So I'm gonna take the reins and go first here, a little power move.
Okay.
So I think that's the thing, is that, like, my low spot was just the overbooking. The way that, like, I hadn't, this was my first WCW pay-per-view, and, like, my impression of this promotion was, like, sort of the joke of, like, oh yeah, classic WCW overbooking. And I was like, there's no way it can be that bad. But we had, over the course of this pay-per-view, we had, like, two unmaskings, a heel turn, like, three run-ins, like, just, like, so much shit that's just, like, can a match just be a match? Just fucking save it, you know?
Totally. And, like, and WCW, like, goes more into that trope the longer they exist.
Yeah.
No match finishes clean. Everything's overbooked. They're trying to come up with a new swerve.
Mm-hmm.
They go into this eventual thing where, like, there are shoots during it, like with Goldberg and Hogan.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, like
I want to watch that.
They light the world on fire, right? And they're like, well, hopefully this pays off. But this was a good example of, like, a classic WCW kind of pay-per-view.
So yeah, so the overbooking was my botched spot. My high spot was, I noticed this during the Raven match, where Raven comes out wearing a pretty dope, albeit late 90s suicidal tendencies t-shirt. And I realized, like, holy shit, nobody's wearing their own merch.
Yeah.
And more than that, nobody is cosplaying as a fucking superhero. And
shade.
This is my fucking, this is my, like, hot take of hot takes for this episode, where, like, it was really cool to go back and just watch a pay-per-view where, like, the characters were able to just be the characters that they are. In 90s wrestling, you don't have, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin dressing up as Captain America. You know? Like, your characters are your characters. They have their own shtick. And the exception here is the NWO wearing NWO shirts, but that was tied into their character. And that I think it's a thing right now where it's like, yeah, it's cute that Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa both dressed as different versions of Wolverine on the same pay-per-view, but I would also like to just see them be Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I don't want everything to have these like little Easter eggs of nerddom and fandom, which is like
it
fine.
Just makes them nerdy.
Yeah, like it totally, like Tommaso Ciampa is supposed to be like the second coming of Triple H, the cerebral assassin, the puppeteer, the like the ruthless Sicilian psychopath. But you're telling me he had time to commission a Wolverine cosplay to go and fight in? Like, it's bullshit. So it was really cool to go back and watch this and be like, these, they're in costuming just as much as promoing or their wrestling style. They're allowing these characters to just be those characters. And I loved that.
I feel like you would have been, like, the biggest Raven fan back in the day.
I don't really actually like Suicidal Tendencies all that much.
No, but like, I'm just talking like...
Don't lie.
Because I knew you would pick up on that like, at some point. I'm like, why didn't he bring this up?
Well, let me just say, my favorite Suicidal Tendencies song is the Body Count cover of Institutionalized.
Institutionalized!
Lauren, give me your high spot and your botched spot.
Okay. My high spot, I guess, is just like, I was blown away by Chris Benoit. Sorry to say it, but I don't know, man. I've never seen him wrestle, and it was amazing. And there was this one part, like, they were doing counter.
He's so good. Like, he's so awful, so good. And, like, Chris Benoit has, like, a catalog of matches that you can go back and watch.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of them, like, you know, even up until whatever, but, like, he was just having these, like, five-star matches nonstop. And, like, it's a damn shame. Because, like, that guy should be praised for his body of work and not, you know, how things ended, so.
Yeah, he fucked himself. But, yeah.
Yeah.
He has such a beautiful intensity in all of his matches where he just, all of his moves, even if they're, like, most of them were amazing, but some of them were basic, but he delivers them in such a way that it just seems devastating. And there's, like, this great part where, like, he's lying down prone and Fit Finley's like looming over him and he grabs Fit Finley's arm and he sort of like tucks Fit Finley's head into his dick. Like he just like tucks his head under him and then he flips him that way. Like he flips Fit Finley over and then that's him going into a pin. And it was the sickest thing. It looked so simple. He just flipped a man via his head. Yeah. It was amazing. That was
I think it's also like Chris Benoit for the style that he wrestled and like the character that he had is like weirdly such a natural babyface, you know, that like
he seems like the diehard,
like speaking to his intensity and like the fact that he was a submission specialist and the thing where it's like, I feel like if he was a wrestler now, he would totally get booked as kind of like a, like Samoa Joe style heel,
like Pitbull kind of,
but it's like, he is his character, just like his physicality and the way that he looks and his facial expressions in the ring a lot of the time is like, he is, if Eddie Guerrero in this era is like the born heel, it's weird to say, but I think Chris Benoit is like the natural baby face.
Definitely. Like he had like, it's a weird parallel, but it's very similar to Goldberg.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I'm not about wrestling ability, but about his facials in the ring, the amount of intensity that he had, the way he carried himself, the way he executed moves, like everything that he did was so crisp and so like intentional. Like it was very good, and like it was like, again, like it's a damn shame, but like watching him in the ring, I was like, man, this guy's undeniable. He's so good.
Yeah, I would say my low spot is the lack of any lady content whatsoever, except for fucking.
Well, Miss Elizabeth wasn't enough.
Elizabeth
for you.
Runs out, does fucking nothing.
She wasn't an integral part of that match.
She does nothing. There was no point in her coming out.
She was one of 25 integral parts of that match.
So yeah, just the lack of female participation.
It was very on brand for the 90s. Like, the 90s were like notoriously bad. And if there were women in that event, you wouldn't have liked the context that there were in that event.
As we will get into when we discuss ECW. So in a way, I'm thankful that there were no women.
Josh, close us out. Your high spot and your botched spot.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, like, there's a lot of really good matches tonight. There's some boring matches. For me, it was during the Ultimo Dragon Eddie Guerrero match. There was a point in the match, it was close to the end, where a fan in the front row took off his shirt.
Oh, and my God.
It got such a huge pop that, like, it completely distracted from the match.
Dude, is this your high point or your low point?
This is my high point.
This should be. I was bummed about this.
I totally missed this.
The
crowd does not pay attention to the match for a long time, six minutes.
And all
minutes.
He did was take off his shirt and then start vigorously pointing to people. Then I think he did the suck it thing at one point.
The thing was the shtick was that he was an overweight guy who took his shirt off.
And I don't think so.
That's why the crowd was like, "Oh, this man!"
It was spirit. The spirit that he had. Well, you know, he was owning that audience. That was his moment. He was hard camera side, WCW, and that was his moment. And I feel like all of these guys on the pay-per-view are going to have their own moments multiple times over the career. But for me, that one guy who had his moment on a pay-per-view, you know, you can't duplicate that. I would say, actually,
I just want to show you, though, my sad face for poor wrestlers during that moment, because they were doing some great wrestling
and the match
and nobody cared.
Was so good.
I will say that my alternative to my high spot was going to be just Ultimo Dragon in general.
Whoa, you don't get two.
No, I got really excited when you said it was during that match, yeah. And I'm a little disappointed that it had nothing to do with Ultimo Dragon.
My actual one is Eddie Guerrero.
Okay.
So, my high spot of the night was watching Eddie Guerrero do his crap.
Oh, who gets two now?
No, but that was a joke. Look it up, pal. Watching Eddie Guerrero be a heel. Honestly, him being a heel during the whole match, slapping Chavo, the smirk, everything Eddie Guerrero did during that match was I would love this guy so much if he was around today. And, he would be my favorite wrestler. Also, Eddie Guerrero is my favorite wrestler. The shirt.
Mm.
Oh, how good is that shirt?
Yeah. So good.
So that's my high spot. Low spot is Vince McMahon not having the grapefruits to show up. That whole segment was terrible.
Yeah.
It was unnecessary. I feel like it was just patting yourself on the back kind of deal. So
yeah, patting yourself on the back while also letting down your audience.
Yeah, I don't know. It was too forced.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That has been the Stone Cold Shots review of Slamboree 1998.
It's 98.
I'm just going to edit that out. Don't worry
Hold
about
up
it.
Is.
Anyways, if you liked what you heard, you can check us out on facebook.com/stonecoldshots. We always have a poll going where you can vote and tell us what to watch in an upcoming episode.
Remember to smash that motherfucking like button. Hit subscribe. Make sure you turn the notification bell on. And we'll see you next.
Play in sequential order.
Yeah.
Do please subscribe to us, Stone Cold Shots, on iTunes or Spotify. Leave us a rating and review.
5 bald heads, baby. And if you need to contact us for any other reason or have any suggestions or questions, you can hit us up at stonecoldshotspod@gmail.com.
That was a long one, guys. Yeah.